Chapter 4. A Quiet Place. The Kins' farm lay in a broad hollow surrounded by three low hills, a sprawling affair of more than a dozen large, white-plastered buildings with flat roofs, gleaming in the sun. Four great barns were built right into the slope of the highest hill, a flat-topped thing with one side that fell away in steep cliffs beyond the barns. A few tall trees that had not lost all of their leaves provided a modicum of shade in the farmyard. To the north and east, olive groves marched away and even up the sides of the hills. A sort of slow bustle enveloped the farm, with easily over 100 people in evidence despite the afternoon heat, carrying on all the everyday tasks, but none quickly. It might almost have passed for a small village instead of a farm, except that there was not a man or a child to be seen. Elaine did not expect any. This was a waypoint for kinswomen passing through Ebou Dar to elsewhere, so there would not be too many in the city itself at one time. But that was a secret matter, as secret as the kin themselves. Publicly, this farm was known for 200 miles or more as a retreat for women, a place for contemplation and escape from the cares of the world for a time, a few days, a week, sometimes longer. Elaine could almost feel serenity in the air. She might have regretted bringing the world into this quiet place, except that she also brought new hope. The first appearance of the horses coming around the leaning hill produced far less stir than she expected. A number of the women stopped to watch, but no more than that. Their clothing varied widely. Elaine even saw a sheen of silk here and there, but some carried baskets and others buckets, or great white bundles of what had to be wash. One held a pair of bound ducks by the feet in either hand. Noblewoman and craftswoman, farmer and beggar, all were equally welcome here, but everyone did a share of the work during her stay. Avienda touched Elaine's arm, then pointed to the top of one of the hills, a thing like an inverted funnel skewed to one side. Elaine added a hand to the shade of her hat, and after a moment saw movement. Small wonder no one was surprised. Lookouts up there could see anyone coming from a long way. A middling woman walked out to meet them short of the farm buildings. Her dress was in the Ebou Dari style, with a deep, narrow neckline, but her dark skirts and brightly colored petticoats were short enough that she did not need to hold them up out of the dust. She did not wear a marriage knife. The kin's rules prohibited marriage. The kin had too many secrets to keep. "That's Elise," Rihanna murmured, reining in between Nynaeve and Elaine. "She runs the farm this turn. She's very intelligent." Almost like an afterthought, she added, even more quietly, "Elise does not suffer fools gladly." As Elise approached, Rihanna drew herself up in her saddle, squaring her shoulders as though for an ordeal. Middling was exactly how Elaine thought of Elise, not someone to give Rihanna pause, certainly, even had she not been the eldest of the knitting circle. Straight-backed, Elise appeared to be somewhere in her middle years, neither slender nor stout, tall nor short, a little gray, flecking dark brown hair that was tied back with a piece of ribbon, but in a very practical manner. Her face was unremarkable, though pleasant enough, a mild face, perhaps a little long in the jaw. When she saw Rihanna, she gave a fleeting look of surprise, then smiled. That smile transformed everything. It did not make her beautiful or even pretty, but Elaine felt warmed by it, comforted. "I hardly expected to see you, Rihanna," Elise said, barely hesitating over the name. Obviously, she was unsure whether to use Rihanna's rightful title in front of Nynaeve and Elaine and Avienda. She studied them with quick glances as she spoke. There seemed to be a bit of Tarabon in her voice. "Berowyn brought word of trouble in the city, of course, but I didn't think it was so bad you would have to leave. Who are all these—" Her words trailed off and her eyes widened, staring beyond them. Elaine glanced back, nearly loosing a few of the choice phrases she had picked up in various places, most recently from Matt Cawthon. She did not understand all of them. Not most of them, really. Nobody ever wanted to explain what they meant exactly, but they did have a way of relieving emotion. The warders had doffed their color-shifting cloaks, and the sisters had drawn up the hoods of their dust cloaks as instructed. Even Saritha, who had no need to hide her youthful face, but Kariana had not pulled hers forward far enough. It simply framed her ageless features. Not everyone would know what they were seeing, yet anyone who had been in the tower surely would. Kariana jerked the hood forward at Elaine's glare, but the damage was done. Others at the farm beside Elise possessed sharp eyes.
"Aes Sedai!"
a woman howled, in tones suitable for announcing the end of the world. Perhaps she was, for her world. Shrieks spread like dust blown on the wind, and that quickly the farm became a kicked anthill. Here and there a woman simply fainted dead away, but most ran wildly, screaming, dropping what they carried, bumping into one another, falling down and scrambling up to run on. Flapping ducks and chickens and short-horned black goats darted wildly to avoid being trampled. In the midst of it all, some women stood gaping, plainly those who had come to the retreat with no knowledge of the kin, though a few of them began to move hurriedly too, caught up in the frenzy. "Light!" Nynaeve barked, yanking her braid. "Some of them are running into the olive groves. Stop them! The last thing we want is a panic. Send the warders! Quick! Quick!" Lan raised a questioning eyebrow, but she waved a peremptory hand at him. "Quick! Before they all run away!" With a nod that seemed to begin as a shake of his head, he sent Mandarb galloping after the other men, curving to avoid the spreading pandemonium among the buildings. Elaine shrugged at Birgitta, then motioned her to follow. She agreed with Lan. It seemed a bit late to try stopping a panic, and warders on horseback attempting to herd frightened women probably was not the best way. But she could not see how to change matters now, and there was no point letting them run off into the countryside. They would all want to hear the news she and Nynaeve brought. Elise gave no sign of running or even fidgeting. Her face paled slightly, but she stared up at Rihanna with a steady gaze. A firm gaze. "Why?" she breathed. "Why, Rihanna? I could not have imagined you doing this. Did they give you bribes? Offer immunity? Will they let you walk free while we pay the price? They probably won't allow it, but I vow I'll ask them to let me call you down. Yes, you! The rules apply even to you, eldest. If I can find a way to manage it, I vow you won't walk away from this smiling." A very firm gaze. Steely, in fact. "It isn't what you think," Rihanna said hurriedly, dismounting and dropping her reins. She caught both of Elise's hands in hers, despite the other woman's efforts to free them. "Oh, I did not want it to be like this. They know, Elise, about the kin. The tower has always known. Everything. Almost everything. But that isn't what is important." Elise's eyebrows tried to climb onto her scalp at that, but Rihanna rushed on, beaming eagerly from under her large straw hat. "We can go back, Elise. We can try again. They said we can." The farm buildings seemed to be emptying as well, women rushing out to learn what the commotion was, then joining the flight without a pause for more than hiking skirts. Shouts from the olive groves said the warders were at work, but not how much they were achieving. Perhaps not a great deal. Elaine sensed growing frustration from Birgitta and irritation. Rihanna eyed the turmoil and sighed. "We must gather them in, Elise. We can go back." "That's all very well for you and some of the others," Elise said doubtfully, "if it's true. What about the rest of us? The tower would not have let me stay as long as I did had I been quicker to learn." She darted a frown at the now well-hooded sisters, and the stare she returned to Rihanna held no little anger. "What would we go back for? To be told again we aren't strong enough and be sent on our way? Or will they just keep us as novices the rest of our lives? Some might accept that, but I won't. What for, Rihanna? What for?" Nynaeve climbed down, tugging her mare forward at the end of her reins, and Elaine imitated her, though leading Lioness more easily. "To be part of the tower, if that's what you wish," Nynaeve said impatiently before even reaching the two kinswomen. "Maybe to be Aes Sedai. Myself, I don't know why you have to be a certain strength if you can pass the fool tests. Or don't go back. Run away, for all I care. Once I'm done here, anyway. Planting her feet, she pulled off her hat and planted her fists on her hips. This is wasting time, Rihanna, and we have work to do. Are you sure there's anybody here we can use? Speak up. If you're not sure, then we might as well get on with it. The hurry might be out of the way, but now we have the thing, I'd as soon it was over and done with. When she and Elaine were introduced as Aes Sedai, the Aes Sedai who had given the promises, Elise made a choked sound and began smoothing her woolen skirts as though her hands wanted to latch onto Rihanna's throat. Her mouth opened angrily, then snapped shut without a sound when Marilla joined them. That stern gaze did not fade completely, but it became mixed with a touch of wonder, and more than a touch of wariness.
"Nynaeve Sedai," Marilla said calmly, "the Atha An Mier are impatient to be off their horses. I think some may ask for healing."
A brief smile flickered across her lips. That settled that question, though Nynaeve grumbled extravagantly about what she was going to do to the next person who doubted her. Elaine might have said a few choice words herself, but the truth was Nynaeve looked more than a little silly carrying on that way, with Merlilla and Rihanna both waiting attentively for her to finish, and Elise staring at all three. That settled it. Or perhaps it was the Windfinders, afoot and pulling their horses behind them. Every shred of grace had vanished during the ride, worn away by hard saddles. Their legs seemed as stiff as their faces, yet no one could mistake them for anything but who they were.
"If there are 20 sea folk this far from the sea," Elise muttered, "I'll believe anything."
Nynaeve snorted but said nothing, for which Elaine was grateful. The woman seemed to be having a hard enough time accepting, even with Marilla naming them Aes Sedai. Neither tirade nor tantrum would help.
"Then heal them," Nynaeve told Marilla. Their eyes went to the hobbling women together, and Nynaeve added, "If they ask, politely."
Marilla smiled again, but Nynaeve had already abandoned the sea folk and gone back to frowning at the now all but empty farm. A few goats still trotted around a farmyard littered with dropped wash and rakes and brooms, spilled buckets and baskets, not to mention the crumpled forms of kinswomen who had fainted, and a handful of chickens had gone back to scratching and pecking. But the only conscious women still in sight among the farm buildings were plainly not of the kin. Some wore embroidered linen or silk, and some rough country woolens, yet the fact that they had not run spoke that much of them. Rihanna said that at any given time as many as half those at the farm might fall into that group. Most appeared stunned. Despite her grumbling, Nynaeve wasted no time taking charge of Elise. Or perhaps Elise took charge of Nynaeve. It was difficult to tell, since the kinswoman showed little of the deference toward Aes Sedai that the knitting circle did. Perhaps she was still just too numbed by the sudden turn of events. In any case, they moved off together, Nynaeve leading her mare and gesturing with the hat in her other hand, instructing Elise on how to bring in the scattered women and what to do with them once they were collected. Rihanna had been sure that at least one woman strong enough to join the circle was there, Garinia Rosoinde, and possibly two more. In truth, Elaine was hoping they had all gone. Elise alternated between nodding and giving Nynaeve very level looks that Nynaeve seemed not to notice. Now, in the wait while the gathering was done, seemed a good time to do a bit more searching through the panniers, but when Elaine turned toward the pack horses, which were just beginning to be led toward the farm buildings, she noticed the knitting circle, Rihanna and the whole lot of them, making their own way into the farm on foot, some hurrying toward women lying on the ground, others toward those standing about gaping. The whole lot of them, and no sign of Ispan. It took only a glance to find her, though. Between Adelius and Van Deen, each holding an arm as they half dragged her along, their dust cloaks streaming behind. The white-haired sisters were linked, the glow of Sidar somehow encompassing them both without including Ispan. There was no way to tell which led the small circle and held the shield on the dark friend, but not even one of the Forsaken could have broken it. They stopped to speak to a stout woman in plain brown wool, who gaped at the leather sack covering Ispan's head,
but still curtsied and pointed toward one of the white-plastered buildings. Elaine exchanged angry glances with Avienda. Well, hers was angry anyway. Sometimes Avienda gave away no more than a stone. Handing their horses over to two of the palace stablemen, they hurried after the three. Some of the women who were not of the kin tried to question them about what was happening, a few in rather overbearing fashion, but Elaine gave them short shrift, leaving behind a wake of indignant sniffs and snorts. Oh, what she would not give to have the ageless face already! That tweaked a thread in the back of her thoughts, but it vanished as soon as she tried to examine it. When she pushed open the plain wooden door where the trio had vanished, Adelius and Van Deen had Ispan seated in a ladder-backed chair with her head bare, the sack lying atop a narrow trestle table with their linen cloaks. The room possessed only one window set in the ceiling, but with the sun still high, it let in a good light. Shelves lined the walls, stacked with large copper pots and big white bowls. By the smell of bread baking, the only other door led into a kitchen. Van Deen looked around sharply at the sound of the door, but seeing them, she smoothed her face to a total lack of expression. "Sumiko said the herbs Nynaeve gave her were wearing off," she said, "and it seemed best to question her a little before fuzzing her brain again. We do seem to have time now. It would be good to know what the Black Aja," her mouth twisted in distaste, "was up to in Ebudar, and what they know." "I doubt they are aware of this farm, since we were not," Adelius said, tapping a finger thoughtfully on her lips as she studied the woman in the chair. "But it is better to be sure than to weep later, as our father used to say." She might have been examining an animal she had never seen before, a creature she could not fathom existing. Ispan's lip curled. Sweat rolled down her bruised face, and her dark beaded braids were disheveled, and her clothing all disarrayed. But despite bleary eyes, she was not nearly so woozy as she had been. "The Black Aja, it is a fable and a filthy one," she sneered, a trifle hoarsely. It must have been very hot inside that leather sack, and she had had no water since leaving the Tarasin Palace. "Me, I am surprised that you will give it voice, and to cast the charge on me. What I have done on the orders of the Ammerlin seat." "Elida?" Elaine spat incredulously. "You have the nerve to claim that Elida ordered you to murder sisters and steal from the tower? Elida ordered what you did in Tyr and Tanchico? Or do you mean Swan? Your lies are pathetic. You've forsaken the three oaths somehow, and that names you Black Aja." "I do not have to answer the questions from you," Ispan said sullenly, hunching her shoulders. "You are rebels against the lawful Ammerlin seat. You will be punished, perhaps stilled, especially if you harm me. I serve the true Ammerlin seat, and you will be punished severely if you harm me." "You will answer any questions my near sister asks." Avienda tested her belt knife on a thumbnail, but her eyes were on Ispan's. "Wetlanders feel pain. They do not know how to embrace it, accept it. You will answer as you are asked." She did not glare or snarl. She just spoke, but Ispan shrank back in the chair. "I fear that is prescribed, even were she not an initiate of the tower," Adelius said. "We are forbidden to shed blood in questioning, or to allow others to do so in our name." She sounded reluctant, though whether over the prohibition or over admitting that Ispan was an initiate, Elaine could not say. She herself had not really considered that Ispan might still be considered one. There was a saying that no woman was finished with the tower until it was finished with her, but truthfully, once the White Tower touched you, it never was finished. Her brow furrowed as she studied the Black Sister, so bedraggled and still so sure of herself. Ispan sat up a little straighter and darted glances full of amused contempt at Avienda and Elaine. She had not been so poised earlier when she thought it was Nynaeve and Elaine alone who had her. Regained composure had come with remembering that there were older sisters present. sisters who would hold White Tower law as part of themselves. That law forbade not only shedding blood, but breaking bones and a number of other things that any White Cloak questioner would be more than ready to do. Before any session began, healing had to be given, and if the questioning started after sunrise, it had to end before sundown. If after sunset, then before sunrise. The law was even more restrictive when it came to initiates of the tower, the sisters and accepted, and novices, banning the use of Sidar in questioning, punishment, or penance. Oh, a sister might flick a novice's ear with the power if she was exasperated, or even give her a swat on the bottom, but not very much more. Ispan smiled at her.
Smiled?
Elaine took a deep breath. Adelius, Vandine, I want you to leave Avienda and me alone with Ispan. Her stomach tried to tie itself into a knot. There had to be a way to press the woman sufficiently to learn what was needed without breaking tower law. But how? People who were to be questioned by the tower usually began talking before a finger was laid on them. Everyone knew that no one held out against the tower. No one. But they were very seldom initiates. She could hear another voice, not Lini's this time, but her mother's. What you order done, you must be willing to do with your own hand. As a queen, what you order done, you have done. If she did break the law. Her mother's voice again. Even a queen cannot be above the law, or there is no law. And Lini's. You can do whatever you wish, child, so long as you're willing to pay the price. She dragged her hat off without untying the ribbons. Keeping her voice steady took an effort. When we are done talking with her, you can take her back to the knitting circle. Afterward, she would submit herself to Marilla. Any five sisters could sit in judgment to set a penance, if they were asked. Ispan's head swung, swollen eyes going from Elaine to Avienda and back, slowly widening until the whites showed all the way around. She was not so sure of herself now. Silent glances passed between Vandine and Adelius, in the manner of people who had spent so much time together they hardly needed to speak aloud any longer. Then Vandine took Elaine and Avienda each by an arm. "If I may speak with you outside a moment," she murmured. It sounded a suggestion, but she was already urging them to the door. Outside in the farmyard, perhaps 2 dozen or so kinswomen were huddled together like sheep. Not all wore Ebudari clothes, but 2 had the red belts of wise women, and Elaine recognized Berowin, a stout little woman who normally showed a pride far greater than her strength in the power. Not now. Like the rest, her face was frightened, her eyes darting, despite the entire knitting circle surrounding them and talking urgently. Down the way, Nynaeve and Elise were trying to herd perhaps 2x as many women inside one of the larger buildings. Trying did seem to be the word.
"Don't care what estates you hold!" Nynaeve was shouting at a proud-necked woman in pale green silk. "You get in there and stay in there out of the way, or I'll kick you inside!"
Elise simply seized the green-clad woman by the scruff of the neck and ran her through the doorway despite voluble and heated protests. There was a loud squawk like a huge goose being stepped on. Then Elise reappeared, dusting her hands. The others seemed to give no trouble after that. Vandine released them, studying their eyes. The glow still enveloped her, yet Adelius must have been focusing their combined flows. Vandine could have maintained the shield, once woven, without being able to see it, but had she been the one, it was much likelier that Adelius would have brought them out. Vandine could have gone 700 paces before the link began to attenuate. It would not break if she and Adelius went to opposite corners of the earth, though it would have been useless long before that. But she remained close to the door. She seemed to sort words in her head.
"I've always thought it best if women with experience handle this sort of thing," she said finally. "The young can easily be caught up in hot blood. Then they do too much. Or sometimes they realize they can't bring themselves to do enough.
because they haven't really seen enough yet. Or worst of all, they find a taste for it. Not that I believe either of you has that flaw. She gave Avienda a weighing glance without pausing. Avienda hastily sheathed her belt knife. Adelius and I have seen enough to know why we must do what must be done, and we left Hot Blood behind long ago. Perhaps you will leave this to us. Much better that way, all around. Van Deen seemed to take the recommendation as accepted. She nodded and turned back toward the door. No sooner had she disappeared behind it than Elaine felt the use of the power within, a weave that must have blanketed the room inside. A ward against eavesdropping, certainly. They would not want stray ears to catch whatever Ispan said. Then another use hit her, and suddenly the silence from within was more ominous than any shrieks that ward would contain. She crushed her hat back onto her head. The heat she could not feel, but the sun's glare suddenly made her queasy. "Maybe you'll help me look over what the pack horses are carrying," she said breathily. She had not ordered it done, whatever it was, but that did not seem to change anything. Avienda nodded with surprising quickness. She seemed to want to be away from that silence, too. The windfinders were waiting not far from where the servants had the pack animals, waiting impatiently and staring about imperiously, arms folded beneath their breasts, copying Renila. Elise marched up to them, marking Renila out as the leader after one sweeping glance. Elaine and Avienda she ignored. "Come with me," she said in brisk tones that brooked no argument. "The Aes Sedai say you will want to be out of the sun until matters are more settled." The words "Aes Sedai" held as much bitterness as they did the awe Elaine was used to from kinswomen. Maybe more. Renila stiffened, her dark face growing darker, but Elise ploughed on. "You Wilders can sit out here and sweat if that's what you want for all of me. If you can sit." It was obvious none of the Athan Mier had received healing for their saddle soreness. They stood like women who wanted to forget they existed, below the waist. "What you will not do is keep me waiting." "Do you know who I am?" Renila demanded in a tight fury, but Elise was already walking away and not looking back. Struggling with herself visibly, Renila dashed sweat from her forehead with the back of her hand, then angrily ordered the other windfinders to leave the sure-cursed horses and follow her. They made a spraddle-legged line, wobbling along after Elise, everyone but the two apprentices muttering to herself, Elise included. Instinctively, Elaine began to plan how to smooth matters over, how to get the Athaan Mier's pains healed without them having to ask, or a sister having to offer too strenuously. Nynaeve had to be appeased, too, and the other sisters. To her surprise, she suddenly realized that for once in her life she had no real desire to smooth anything. Watching the windfinders limp toward one of the farm buildings, she decided that matters were fine just as they were. Avienda wore a large, open grin as she watched the Athaan Mier. Elaine snatched the much smaller smile from her own face and turned to the pack horses. They did deserve it, though. Not grinning was very hard. With Avienda's help, the searching went more quickly than before, though Avienda did not recognize what they were after as quickly as she did. Not a great surprise. A few of the sisters Elaine had trained showed a greater skill in this than she did herself, but most came nowhere near. Still, two sets of hands found more than one, and there was a great deal to be found. Liveried stablemen and women carried away the rubbish, while a collection of turangrial grew on the broad stone lid of a square cistern. Four more horses were unloaded quickly, and they accumulated a selection that would have caused a celebration brought into the tower, even with no one studying turangrial. They took every form imaginable. Cups and bowls and vases, no two the same size or design or in the same material. A flat, worm-eaten box, half falling apart, and whatever had lined it long since gone to dust, held pieces of jewelry. A necklace and bracelets set with colored stones, a slim gem-studded belt, several finger rings, and there were spaces for more. Every single one was a Turangrial, and they all matched, meant to be worn together, though Elaine could not imagine why any woman would want to carry so many about her at one time. Avienda found a dagger with gold wire wrapped around a hilt of rough deer horn. The blade was dull, and by all evidence always had been. She kept turning that over and over in her fingers. Her hands actually began to tremble, until Elaine took it away from her and put it with the others on the cistern's lid. Even then, Avienda stood for a time, looking at it and licking her lips as though they had gone dry. There were finger rings, earrings, necklaces, bracelets, and buckles, many of very peculiar pattern indeed. There were statuettes and figures of birds and animals and people, several knives that did have edges, half a dozen large medallions in bronze or steel, most worked with strange patterns, and not one carrying an image Elaine could really understand. A pair of peculiar hats, seemingly made of metal, too ornate and too thin to be helmets, and any number of items she could not think what to call. A rod as thick as her wrist, bright red and smooth and rounded, firm rather than hard, for all that it seemed to be stone. It did not warm slightly in her hand, it almost felt hot. Not real heat any more than the warmth was real, but still. What about a set of metal basketwork balls, one inside the other? Any movement produced a faint musical chime, a different tone every time, and she had the feeling that no matter how hard she looked into it, there would always be a still smaller ball waiting to be discovered. A thing that looked like a blacksmith's puzzle made of glass. It was heavy enough that she dropped it, and it broke a chip off the edge of the cistern cover. A collection to stir amazement in any eyes, Sedai. More important, they found two more Angreal. Those Elaine set very carefully aside within arm's reach. One was an odd piece of jewelry, a golden bracelet attached by four flat chains to finger rings, every bit of it engraved in an intricate maze-like pattern. That was the stronger of the two, stronger than the turtle still in her pouch. It was made for a smaller hand than hers or Avienda's. Strangely, the bracelet had a tiny lock, complete with a minuscule tubular key dangling from a fine chain that was obviously made to be removed, along with the key. The other was a seated woman in age-darkened ivory, her legs folded in front of her, her exposed knees bare, but with hair so long and luxuriant she could not have been more muffled in the heaviest cloak. It was not even as strong as the turtle, but she found it very appealing. One hand rested on a knee, palm up and fingers arranged so the thumb touched the tips of the middle two fingers, while the other hand was lifted, the first two fingers raised and the others folded. The whole figure carried an air of supreme dignity, yet the delicately worked face showed amusement and delight. Maybe it had been made for a particular woman? It seemed personal somehow. Perhaps they had done that in the age of legends. Some Turangrial were immense, needing men and horses or even the power to move, but most Angrial were small enough to carry about your person. Not all, but most. They were tossing back the canvas covers on another set of wicker panniers when Nynaeve came striding up. The Atha An Mier began filing out of one of the farm buildings, no longer limping. Marilla was talking with Ranila, or rather the Windfinder was talking and Marilla listening. Elaine wondered what had happened in there. The slim gray did not look so satisfied any more. The huddle of kinswomen had grown larger, but even as Elaine looked up, three more came hesitantly into the farmyard, and another two stood at the edge of the olive trees, peering about indecisively. She could sense Brigitte somewhere out among the groves, and only a little less irritated than earlier. Nynaeve glanced at the display of Turangrial and gave her braid a tug. Her hat had gone missing somewhere. "That can wait," she said, sounding disgusted. "It's time."